RC Talk, the voice of Ratio Christi at Marshall University. My name is John Mays. I'm your host. I'm also the regional director for the states of West Virginia and Pennsylvania, along with being the chapter director at Marshall University. So I guess I need to start today by apologizing. I missed last week, and I know that those one or two followers that listen were sitting on the edge of their seats waiting anxiously for me to record and publish another podcast, and I apologize. There's just a lot going on in my life right now, and I didn't have the ability. I don't know what else to say other than sorry. I'm back on track now, and I think today's show will not only be helpful, but I found it rather interesting as well. Not that all of the rest of my shows aren't interesting. Well, at least I think they are. So, let's move on. Let's talk about Christmas. What? Christmas? Yes. It's almost Christmas. A couple of weeks, something like that. Before I get to the Christmas story, though, and the actual focus or point of this show, let me give you a couple of facts concerning Christmas. And this is where the helpful part may come in. Keeping Christ in Christmas. We hear this every year around this time of year, obviously. I mean, some of you probably already know what I'm getting ready to say, but some don't. Using the X or making it Xmas is not taking Christ out of Christmas. Why, you say? Well, because, are you ready? Actually, the usage of X is nearly as old as Christianity itself. Its origins lie in the fact that the first letter in the Greek word for Christ is C-H-I, chi. And the Greek letter chi is represented by a symbol similar to the letter X in the modern Roman alphabet. Thus, Xmas is indeed perfectly legitimate abbreviation for the word. In fact, it's a perfectly legitimate abbreviation for Christian, X-I-A-N. So there, what a start. What more could you ask for? An opportunity to share the gospel and knowing that we're not taking Christ out of Christmas. It's actually Greek. What a concept. What the New Testament was written in, and it's an abbreviation. So, there's one. Next one will be a little bit more interesting, I think. Well, maybe not to you. I found it interesting. How about Santa Claus? Did you know, there actually was a real person named Saint Nick? I mean, I don't want to bust anybody's bubble that believes in Santa Claus, but seriously, there was a Saint Nick. His name was Saint Nicholas of Myra, M-Y-R-A. But before I share that with you, I must give credit on where I got it from. There's a lot of sources out there for this particular bit of information. But my friend Brian Chilton, who recently wrote the book, A Layman's Manual on Christian Apologetics, that I have the privilege of reading and reviewing, so look for that in a later podcast. But Brian also wrote a blog concerning Saint Nick. So what I'm sharing with you comes from him, and you can Google that, look him up, whatever. Or like I said, there's a lot of other sources that will give you the same information. He just compacted it in a nice... So, Saint Nick, Nicholas, I ran out of things to say about him. Saint Nicholas is one of the more popular saints in the Greek and Roman churches. However, not much is known about him historically. Nicholas is believed to have been born in the ancient Lycian seaport of Patara in Asia Minor around 280. As a young man, Nicholas journeyed to Israel and Egypt to study alongside the Desert Fathers, who may have included St. Anthony the Great, somewhere around 251 to 356, and St. Abba, and there's no way I can say this his last name, P-A-C-H-O-M-I-U-S, Pachomius the Great, around 292 to 348. Anyway, upon his return some years later, Nicholas, the real Saint Nick, was ordained as the Bishop of Myra, which is now modern-day Turkey. There's a small city in modern-day Turkey. It is said that the Emperor Diocletian imprisoned Nicholas before Constantine rose to power, legalizing Christianity in the Roman Empire, and releasing Nicholas and other Christians who had been imprisoned for their faith. During Nicholas's time in prison, he was beaten numerous times, but maintained his strong Christian convictions despite the torture he suffered. See? And that's just a little bit of background on him. Here's where he becomes famous. Two acts of old Saint Nick made him legendary. First, Nicholas is noted for his great generosity. Nicholas came from a wealthy family and maintained a position of financial influence throughout his life. However, it's said that Nicholas walked by the home of a father who fell on hard times. The father and his family were so impoverished that his three daughters would be forced into slavery or prostitution to earn money to keep the family alive. While everyone was asleep, Nicholas, sounds like I'm reading you a Christmas story, doesn't it? Nicholas reached through their window and tossed a bag of gold into the man's shoes, which were drying by the fireplace. The money would pay the dowry for the first daughter. No one in the household knew how the money was placed into the shoe. On the second night, Nicholas did the same to pay for the second daughter, and the third night, the third bag for the third daughter. However, again, a member of the household noticed, Nicholas was the benefactor and thanked him for his great generosity. Saint Nicholas was known to have secretly given gifts to the children of his community. It is said that Nicholas wore red robes and donned a long white beard. That comes from the CatholicNewsAgency.com. And that children of the area would place shoes or stockings beside the fireplace in hopes that St. Nick would soon be there. Yes, yes, I know. That sounds 100% like a Christmas story, fiction, legend, and whatever. And it may very well be. We don't know, as I stated. However, the second point we're pretty confident of. Nicholas is known for his theological faithfulness. While his name does not appear on the earliest lists, later lists include Nicholas of Myra as being one of the attendants of the Nicene Council of 325. What? Say it ain't so. Yes, and if you haven't heard of the Nicene Council, well, this probably doesn't mean a whole lot to you anyway. But anyway, Nicholas was there. Like many of the aspects of Nicholas's life, the following story is difficult to prove with any degree, but it's common knowledge for those of us who study things like the Council of Nicaea and such things. Anyway, the main area of focus for the Council of Nicaea was to decide whether Christ was eternally God, as argued by Athanasius of Alexandria. You get the point. Or if he was the first created being, as contended by Arius of Alexander. During the heat of the discussion, Nicholas is said to have knocked out Arius of Alexander. So, Nicholas is said to have not. Nicholas did not approve of the heretical claims of Arius, so he took Arius into his own hands. Remember, it was Christ who helped Nicholas. Though the tortures he endured in prison, someone saying something objectionable about his Jesus transformed the otherwise generous, mild-mannered saint into a heavy-handed boxer. So we're more confident of the second point than we are the first point. And I guess that what I found interesting personally, and I've heard this for years since I started going to school and hanging around other apologists, this is a common, like I said, especially around Christmas time. One final thing concerning Nicholas. He died on December 6, 343 in Myra. The anniversary of his death became a day of remembrance for a man who held great orthodoxy, meaning right beliefs, small o, and orthopraxy, doing the right thing, right actions. His feast day was later integrated into Christmas celebrations. Rather than claiming that Santa Claus is some pagan entity, which you will hear, the real Saint Nicholas is a reminder of what the Christian life should be, as Nicholas lived out his faith, without exception, including punching heretics. So, keep this in mind. When you're talking about Santa Claus with your children or your other people that will tell you that they don't celebrate Christmas or they don't believe in Santa Claus and such things as that, there really was a Saint Nick, though we know minimal information about him. What I did share with you, we seem pretty confident about. And the X in Christmas, Xmas, or X-T-I-N, Christian, you're not taking the Christ out of Christmas or Christian. There's two facts that you can use to share the gospel and very non-offensive, very, I don't know, Christ-like. How's that? That's what I seem to hear a lot. So, on to the bigger part of my point in today's show. The Christmas story in the Bible. Most churches will talk about this during this time of year. A lot of families will read the Christmas story from Luke chapter 2, verse 1 through 20. And today I want to give you something that most churches or most people don't know or don't share. I'm going to focus on the first seven verses. So in chapter 2, verse 1, we have no evidence that Augustus ever issued a decree resulting in an empire-wide registration, a census, though several censuses were conducted during his reign having this effect. Luke may have been merely summarizing the intention of these registrations or referring to a decree that expressed such an intention. Evidence does exist that the Romans sometimes took census registrations of client kingdoms, as Palestine was at this time, and may even point to the existence of tax rolls in Samaria prior to Herod's death. Herod had fallen out of favor with Augustus toward the end of his life, and Augustus may have pressured Herod to conduct the registration in view of his advanced age and the possibility of Roman acquisition of at least some of Herod's territory upon his death. That's one of the most common objections you're going to hear if you're talking about the Christmas story with people that don't believe in the Bible or don't believe in God and such things as that. Verse 1, they object because they claim there was no census. And just for your information, I'm gathering my information from the Apologetic Study Bible. I highly recommend it because it gives you apologetics. What a concept. Anyway, so moving on. Verse 2, the Jewish historian Josephus wrote that Quirinius became governor of Syria and instituted a registration in Judea in AD 6 or 6 AD. too late for the supposed birth of Jesus under Herod the Great. Reference Matthew 2:1, Luke 1:5. Herod the Great, who probably died in 4 B.C. I know this. I'm just reading. I'm going through this pretty quick. If you have any questions or comments, I'll give you an address later. You can email me. So, Luke clearly knew of this registration, Acts 5:37, so that calling the registration of chapter 2 the first, in apparent opposition to the later census, strongly suggests he did not have his facts mixed up, he being Luke. The verse is to be read as either, one, disassociating the first, or, yes, disassociating Quirinius's, and some of these words obviously I have a hard time pronouncing, but I do have that speech impediment, remember, from the registration. I'll go through that one again. The verse is to be read as either, and we're talking about chapter 2, verse 2, either disassociating Quirinius from the registration, i.e. this was a former registration taken before the famous one under Quirinius, or posting two registrations administered by him. This is the registration taken by Quirinius for the first time he was governor or some other administrator of Syria. You got that? Our knowledge of the relevant historical facts is too incomplete to determine a more definitive solution. The point being, there is an answer to those objections. The first two verses, we have answers to that. And I don't expect you to memorize these things or whatever, but know that these answers exist, because so many times I've said this, people don't think Christianity is relative. They don't think it's true. They don't care. They don't believe you. And if you can give them a solid answer, the church is going to have so much more impact on society. If you just listen, learn, I don't know, try it. There you go. Just try it and see. What's the worst case scenario? Verse 3. The Romans did not normally require people to return to their ancestral homes to be registered, so this detail may support a registration under methods while Herod was still king. Similarly, if Luke were referring to the registration of Quirinius in AD 6, it is unlikely Joseph was required to leave Galilee, ruled by Herod's son Antipas, to register in Judea, administered by a Roman prefect under the authority of the province of Syria. Whew. Easy for me to read, huh? Going on, we're still on verse 3. This detail makes much more sense if Galilee and Judea were at the same time under one administration, such as during the reign of Herod the Great. So, three verses, three answers. Three answers that you've probably not heard in church or been taught, because we just read it and we just seem to think, it's true, yeah, that happened. But maybe it did, maybe it didn't. You need to know whether it did or didn't, because some people do, and they will tell you. And then what are you going to do? Well, the Bible says so, so I just believe it. No. Know that there are answers. All right. We'll skip real quick to verse 7, still in chapter 2, Christmas story. Chapter 7, and this is one that we teach our children, that you see in churches. Oh, my goodness. But don't get me wrong. There's nothing wrong with this or what we do, but know that it's not necessarily factual. Okay. Some argue that Bethlehem would not have had an inn, motel, place to stay. Remember how it goes. Since it was not on any major road, and that the story is therefore fictitious. The story of Mary and Joseph coming to Bethlehem, there was no room for them at the inn. Well, but attempting to claim the non-existence of an inn in Bethlehem is mere conjecture. And besides, the Greek term translated guest room simply means lodging and can refer to a guest room in a private home. You have to understand, we're translating Greek into English. There's not always an English word for the Greek term. So, when I went through that before. Point being, animal stalls with their mangers were normally located inside the one-room residence of peasant families. Animals were sometimes kept in caves, and an early Christian tradition places the birth of Jesus where? In a cave. So, there's a lot more to where that came from. I hope you enjoyed it. I found it extremely interesting, obviously, or I wouldn't have shared it with you. And I think we need to share it with others. Three wise men is another one just off the top of my head. It doesn't say there was three wise men. There could have been numerous. It just names three gifts. So that's the way we portray it. We portray it in a barn, in a little trough or whatever. It's probably in a cave. All right. Hope you found that a little bit helpful, or at least, I don't know, thought-provoking. If you have any questions or comments, please email me at johnmays@ratiochristi.org. And as I mentioned previously on other podcasts, this time of year is when we get the majority of our support for the coming year. We would love, welcome, appreciate any amount that you can give towards next year's goal in our support. If it's a one-time gift, if it's a monthly gift, it's fantastic. If you want to give a one-time gift, I would ask you kindly to do it over a 12-month period. It doesn't matter. However you want to do it, you can do that at johnmays.ratiochristi.org. And until next time, you probably were thunderstruck.